Gilbert Gottfried. You're listening to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. Today, we're talking to one of the greatest illustrators and cartoonists of our time. His work has appeared in the New York Times, Newsweek, Esquire, Rolling Stone, Time, National Lampoon, and the Wall Street Journal, just to name a few. So today, Frank Santopadre and myself sat down with Drew Friedman at New York City Society of Illustrators. The name of his brand new book is Heroes of the Comics, featuring 85 portraits of the legends of comic books published by Fantagraphics Books. So now we talk to Drew Friedman. Hi, I'm Gilbert Gottfried, and I'm here with my co-host, Frank Santopadre, and this is the Amazing Colossal Podcast. We're here today. We're taping at the Society of Illustrators on 63rd between Park and Lex, where they're currently having a whole gallery of the work of Drew Friedman. And if you don't know that name, you'd recognize his drawings from, like, National Lampoon, where I met him, and The New Yorker, and I think every other magazine.
Playboy, yeah, everywhere else.
So
Entertainment Weekly.
Playboy. Was I in Playboy? I don't remember
you
that.
You weren't in Playboy?
No.
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 See, I told Frank never to talk during this show. I begged him.
You were never in Playboy?
No, I was never
in
Playboy.
See, you're killing the show.
I've read
Playboy.
Shut up. My dad was in Playboy.
You don't know anything about my guest.
Where do you come up?
Please shut up, Frank. He has to mention Playboy. You've never been in it.
No, I never.
Entertainment Weekly.
Yes, there you go. There you go. We mix them up.
You're in Highlight.
Yeah. Highlights, yes. I only went to the dentist to read highlights.
Yes.
It's the only reason.
Now, we did meet, I'm pretty sure, at National Lampoon.
We did. We kind of found each other there because we both loved Lon Chaney Jr.
Yes.
And Lionel Atwell and George Zucko, so we had that in common, and especially Tor Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
So we clicked.
And I remember I used to write articles
right
at the time. And for National Lampoon.
This is when National Lampoon was no longer funny. This is the 80s. It was no longer funny. So that's when we joined.
It's kind of like my season of Saturday Night Live. It's when the show stopped being funny.
That's right.
Belushi had left. Chevy Chase had left.
You had Joe Piscopo.
Yes. So I bring in the
Charlie Rocket.
Funny.
Charlie Rocket, right? What happened to him?
Oh, I could tell you.
He says fuck and the career is over.
Get
over and
fires.
Out. Over and out. But we loved him. I remember him fondly. Yeah. Not a Jew.
Charlie's no longer with us.
Yeah. I know that. You know, God bless his soul. That's what you're supposed to say, right? God bless his soul. Fuck him. But he's not a Jew, and he's not hanging on the wall.
And do you remember what I nicknamed you at Lampoon?
Well, I know you're lying whenever we run into each other. To this day, Jew Dots. Of course, I haven't drawn with dots for 20 years.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
I don't renew my material.
It's an affectionate.
If you know anything about me.
That's for sure.
He hasn't updated.
I've been doing the same act since I was 12.
It's a tradition with us.
Jew Dots. Yeah. You would come in with your head down, and I'd follow you around, start screaming.
That's right.
Jew Dots. Everyone bow down to Jew Dots.
That's right.
Because you would shade with millions of tiny dots.
Obsessive dots.
I'm tapping on a table like.
That's right. You remember that?
Yes.
Because Gilbert used to come over to my apartment on 6th Street. You know, the block with all the 400 Indian restaurants.
Oh, yes, yes.
I'd be working on a deadline, and Gilbert would knock on the door, so I'd let him in. So what do you want?
He said, I want to watch Plan 9 from Outer Space.
I actually had a VHS recorder. Gilbert just got one last year. So I put that on, or the Black Sleeper, you know, the old shitty.
I just got a Betamax.
Exactly. Doesn't that work like a charm?
Yeah.
I'm into beta, too. But we would sit there in silence and watch these movies together.
Beast of Yucca Flats.
Well, that too. And yeah, anything with Tor Johnson.
What I remember, too, is when I was a kid, they would have, like, reruns of Route 66 every day.
Sure.
At a certain time. And I always knew there was this one episode called, I think, Owlet's Wing and Lizard's Tail.
That's it.
And that had Boris Karloff, Lon Chaney Jr., and Peter Lorre.
Right.
And I would check the TV section every day. The one day I don't check it, I realized that one aired.
That's right.
And it
was
horrible.
I think I missed that, too. But we used to see the photographs in Famous Monsters.
Oh, yeah.
Lon Chaney had lousy werewolf makeup on.
Oh, horrible.
Boris Karloff, they just stuck a thing on his head.
The worst.
And Peter Lorre didn't have to wear any makeup anyway.
That was what was so ridiculous.
Very weak.
At the end, they're supposed to come out as their classic characters. So Boris Karloff's in Frankenstein makeup, Lon Chaney Jr.'s in Wolfman makeup,
right.
And Peter Lorre's wearing a top hat.
That's right.
Not Mr. Moto?
Yeah. No, nothing. He should have.
He was that. But in theory, it sounded great. But when you actually watched it, it was one of those things. This stinks. It was terrible.
Oh, it was awful.
That's right.
I thought, how could it be bad?
George Maharis was better in that. It was just a big disappointment, but, you know, it didn't live up.
Now, here's always the test. Can you name the person who was caught in the men's room with George Maharis?
Oh, that guy? Tom Leopold would know.
Yeah,
you know,
I know it.
You know, I don't know his name.
Oh, I'm ashamed.
And I'm ashamed. I do know who played in the Amazing Colossal Man. That was Glenn Langdon.
Oh, very good.
Gilbert had asked me about that earlier, and I didn't Google it. It just came to me.
Nice anyway, work. The guy in the men's room was Perfecto Tellis.
Ah, that's right, that's right.
A guy who could only. When you have a name like that.
Can you get him for this show?
He's hard to get.
That's a great story.
He's the only person I can get for this show.
I think you should track him down and get him, because that's an amazing story, which, you know, we can't tell on this show. But it was very disappointing.
Perfecto Tellez.
Yeah.
I've heard Leopold mention that name.
That's right. I think he wrote a book. Didn't he write a book like Lance Rensel wrote a book?
I believe he did.
He wrote his book, too. Lance Rensel was, of course, Joey Heatherton's husband, who, Woody Allen was into children.
Oh.
Can I go there? I'm going there.
Wow.
Someone asked me about Woody Allen. Said, Drew, do you believe it? I said, I don't know. I wasn't there. But to me, the worst crime is these shitty movies he's made for the last 20 years. That offends me.
I think the first horror movie that I remember seeing as a little boy was The Indestructible Man.
Right, we've discussed that.
Lon Chaney Jr., Joe Flynn from McHale's Navy.
Wow.
And I think it was Robert Shane.
And Casey Adams.
Oh, Casey Adams, who was also known as Max Showalter.
Remember him, Frank?
I remember.
That's right.
I remember Robert Shane
comedic.
From Superman.
Yes,
Inspector Henderson.
But Casey Adams, and he was also known as Max Showalter, was also in 16 Candles with Molly Ringwald.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he was in the Twilight Zone episode where with Billy Mummy, where he sends everybody out into the cornfield.
Oh, wow.
He's
in
there.
Oh, I know who he is.
Yeah, yeah.
I know who he is.
Yeah, he had those crazy eyes.
He was serious, and then he went comedic.
I know who he is.
And then he went back to comedic.
That's when you said that.
Yeah. Or back to serious. Yeah. Casey Adams.
And
but we used to watch that. We used to talk about that because Lon Chaney had those baggy eyes at that point.
Oh, yeah. They used to show close-ups of his eyes.
That's right.
In the movie.
Gilbert and I watched that on Chiller Theater, you know, when we were kids.
Yeah.
Because they show it every other week, practically.
And they're playing, like, dramatic music on his eyes like it's supposed to. And the scary thing is he's got a drunk's eyes.
That's right. It's very baggy and red. It was black and white. Back in those days.
You could see the red in the black and
Chiller
white.
Chiller Theater showed about... They rotated about six different movies. So that was, you know, it was going to come up once a month. It was that and The Giant Behemoth and The Black Sleep, and then back to Indestructible Man.
And The Black Sleep was a big disappointment because that was Lon Chaney Jr., John Carradine,
it was an incredible
Tor
cast.
Johnson.
Yeah. And Basil Rathbone.
And it's like the parts with the main aunt, Bela Lugosi.
That's
who's
right.
Not talking.
His official last film.
You know,
Plan 9, he kind of walked around in front of Tor Johnson's house. And then the graveyard. But Black Sleep was his official.
Is that the one you emailed me the photographs from?
I'm sure I did.
They're having lunch in the cafe.
Oh, yes.
Life magazine sent photographers there. They never ran the photographs, but they took hundreds of photographs at a restaurant in Hollywood, 1956, when they wrapped the film, and they were all in costume. So Tor Johnson comes in with, you know, his undershirt on, shaved head. And, you know, he was there to eat. They were all, you know, they were hungry. But, you know, it's an amazing photograph.
Life magazine, they are wonderful pictures.
They never released them, and they never showed them in the magazine, but years later, that's why the interwebs are nice. I mean, sometimes they work.
And I heard they used to try to eat in the commissary, and everyone's complaining about disturbing they look.
Well, yeah, those guys and the woman with the hair popping out of her.
Oh, yes.
The bald woman with the hair popping out of her face, and the guy with the half his face, George Chiquita.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, disturbing. Like, it had this amazing cast.
He had a sailor's outfit.
That's right. That's right.
I don't know why that was so scary.
I forget who the writer was, but they flash back to Tor Johnson before he becomes a mongoloid idiot. And he's like a professor. He's like
he's wearing a monocle.
That's right.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, the poor professor from Russia. And like, look at him now.
like a monocle. Well, he must be smart.
Right.
Because how else could you wear a monocle?
That's right. He was always an intellectual at the beginning, and then he becomes a mongoloid idiot.
Like anyone could possibly believe.
He's a police chief in Plan 9 outer space, of course. Professor Clay.
Police chief who can't walk three feet without getting winded.
He pulls out his pistol and that's it. But he had his most dialogue in that film, you know. And, a soliloquy, basically.
Oh, yeah. And Lon Chaney Jr. plays Mongo.
That's right.
And it's supposed to be that originally he was also a brilliant professor named Dr. Monroe.
That's right.
But because now he's a monster, they can't call him Dr. Monroe. They have to give him a monster name.
Right. He was Mongo or Lobo. You know, yes. He went back and forth. Usually he was Lobo, no matter what movie he was in.
So like if a guy's name was Jack Jones, they couldn't call him Jack Jones if he's a monster.
That's right.
So it would be like JoJo or something.
My favorite Tor Johnson moment is when he was on You Bet Your Life with Groucho Marx.
Oh, my God, yes.
In 1960. He was plugging a film that never even came out. Night of the Ghouls, I think it was called.
But they
had beautiful chemistry together.
Your name is Tor Johnson.
Tor Johnson.
And you're Night of the Ghouls.
Tor was frustrated. And then he got into it. And they could have taken the act on the road.
Did he know he was that Groucho Marx was a comedian?
He had no clue. No clue. He was there for the money, I think. And he didn't get a single question right.
Did Fenneman treat him well?
Greek mythology was his category. Really? I don't know how he picked that. He stood there in silence.
You look at him and you say, oh, this guy knows Greek
expert.
Mythology.
Somehow that was his category. He didn't get one right, and he left with nothing. And it was one of the great moments in, you know.
So Gilbert would come to your apartment to watch, and
you would put these
movies on.
We'd sit there in silence and watch them.
It was the first time I saw that episode of Route 66.
That's right. I played it for you.
And it was a bad copy.
It was
all like
everything was bad then. That's all you had.
Yeah, yeah. But it was...
It was a bad copy of a bad show.
Then I finally got a clean copy, and it was just god-awful.
Even worse. That's right.
That was the... one of two times Lon Chaney was on Route 66, if you remember, because he also played George Maharis's father.
Do I remember?
In an episode.
Who
are you talking to?
Do I remember? And who was also on that, and they didn't have a scene together, like idiots, they didn't put them together, was Betty Fields, who starred with Lon Chaney of Mice and Men.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And they did no scenes together, which was idiotic.
Really? What were they thinking? Betty Fields? No, I didn't know that. I forgot that.
I did not know that.
Betty Fields.
And what would happen when you told Gilbert that he had to leave because you had to work. You had a deadline.
I was a fan of Gilbert, you know, as a comedian. And it's like, Gilbert, I have to, you know. After a couple hours, like Gilbert lived about a block from me. I was on 6th Street and Gilbert
I lived on Avenue A.
Gilbert was on Avenue A, so I sent him home. And, you know, and we
put on the parka.
And he'd come back next week. Yeah, that was beautiful. I sent him home to his mom, and he, you know, he'd come back next week.
I was basically like Kramer.
That's right. He'd show up. You were my Norton.
Yes.
Get out. Get out. And he'd come back. And always forgiven. But we had, those were happy times. We had lots of fun.
Oh, boy.
Now, and I remember they also used to show Boris Karloff in The Haunted Strangler.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Was like a bad
late 50s Boris Karloff.
Oh, yes. Real bad.
The Manster. No, that wasn't.
Oh, Manster I liked.
We love The Manster.
Yeah.
Remember that,
yeah.
Frank?
It
was a two-headed. It was a joint production of America and Japan.
Right.
Two-headed
guy. He's got another little Manster growing inside his body. And when they finally split apart, they do it. There's a tree between
yes.
them.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden they come apart. I thought it was amazing when I was a kid. And later on, I figured out they were just saving money on special.
Yes.
So there's a tree between them, and he splits off.
And I'm going, wait a second. If two bodies split apart from one body, how come his clothes are covering both bodies?
And the Manster is little. The other little guy is a Japanese guy in makeup. I think that's Glenn Langdon too. It was like a blonde-haired guy who played the poor Manster.
But there was one great scene where he gets affected by radiation or whatever the hell, and he's looking in the bathroom mirror, pulls down his shirt, and on the back of his shoulder is an eye.
A little eyeball.
Ooh. Yeah.
It's disturbing. Have you showed that to your son yet?
No.
You're saving that? Save that for him.
It's like a cousin of the incredible two-headed transplant.
Basically. It was like an early version of that.
With Ray Milland.
Before they found Rosie Gill. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
it was like that. It was the beginning of that genre of film, two-headed.
And all I could think about watching that one was how bad Rosie Greer must have smelled, like in the.
You know, it's possible Ray Milland didn't smell so great either.
That's true, too.
Just because he was a football player.
And big and fat.
Rosie Greer went from protecting Robert Kennedy from getting killed. He did a great job to co-starring in
the two-headed transplant. Yeah.
And he was knitting at the same time, too.
So he would have to go to job interviews. And go, what was your last job? Oh, well, I was protecting the life of
Senator Kennedy.
Of Senator Kennedy.
And you're hired.
Great.
Nice job.
That went well.
Got him hired on the incredible two-headed.
Before we go completely off track here.
Wasn't he Lurch protecting JFK in Dallas today?
Ted Cassidy?
Ted Cassidy. I know he was on the grassy knoll.
I think that
Woody
was
Harrelson's
he was a newspaper.
That's
right.
Was protecting John Kennedy. And I remember in the two-headed transplant, Ray Milland is there with his head over Rosie Greer's
shoulder. That was a good scene.
That was the special
effect. They do a lot of running.
Oh, yes. And when they're running, it's Rosie Greer running and this little balloon
with
a smiley face on it bouncing around.
Ray Milland was an Oscar winner, you know,
for Lost
Weekend. And here he is with Rosie Greer.
And there's one part where he takes over control of the mind while Rosie Greer is asleep. And he makes Rosie Greer punch himself in the face and knock himself out.
Beautiful.
It was sort of a brotherhood story, wasn't it? Siamese twins.
And then there was the other one.
With Bruce Dern.
Bruce Stern,
right, yes. That's right.
But he was the mad
dog. That was one of those films that Famous Monsters would showcase it, and it looked like it was going to be great. Like sort of like Dracula versus Frankenstein with Vizandor Vorkov.
Oh my God!
And then you'd see it, and it was the worst piece of shit. And I was like, what are they thinking? Who's paying these guys off?
Oh, Frankenstein versus Dracula.
And that's Lon Chaney's last film, and
J. Carol
Nash. And J. Carol Nash's.
And
film.
I heard
and
that
Russ Tamblyn was in there.
Oh yes, from West Side Story.
And strippers were in there. And Anthony Ashley, I think, is in there.
And I heard at one time, Lon Chaney was sitting in the room with J. Carol Nash, and he said, "Oh, well, Jay, I guess we're both going to be dead soon. And J. Carroll Nash said, shut up, Lon. But he was right. I think they both died shortly after.
It's true. That was the last... Gilbert, you used to talk about Return from the Past with Lon Chaney.
Oh, my God,
and that
yes.
Was doctor, he played a doctor, a scientist.
Yeah, brilliant
and
doctor.
And all he did was talk about his theories.
And, I have a theory. I have a theory.
You never figured out what his theory was, but that was all his
I have a theory.
He was supposed to be a Scottish doctor, which he's very convincing as a Scottish
doctor. That film
doctor.
Is great because you watch that, and John Carradine is the host.
Oh,
and he's
my
holding
God.
A cigarette throughout the whole film as he's hosting,
yes.
You know, in his hand.
He can't even bother to put it down because he knows what shit he's filming.
Right, they're
he won't
him,
even bother
I
to put
I think they're
the
paying him $100. And they fed him, and it's a piece of shit. But, you know, Gilbert and I used to discuss that film.
The fact that he even put his pants on.
That's right. He came to, you know, they pay him, and he's like Henny Youngman. They pay him, he's the Henny Youngman of horror actors. You're going to pay me, I'll come.
And he was. He's a Scottish doctor in, like, the 1800s.
Yeah, that's right. And Rochelle Hudson was in that, too.
Yes.
Who was once a star.
And there's one scene, and it takes place in the 1800s, and Lon
it was like Dark Shadows. There were flashbacks.
And Lon Chaney is wearing a wristwatch through the whole movie.
It's like Jerry Lewis in The Day the Clown Cried. He's got his wristwatch. He's got his pinky ring, and he's got his black shiny shoes on. But aside from that, yes, he's in Auschwitz.
And he's got the pomade in his
That's
hair.
Right.
So because we're here at the Society of Illustrators.
Oh, wait. I just remembered.
I'm never going to get to this.
When he finally brings...
One more point.
Chaney,
one more point.
When Chaney brings the guy to life, dead body.
Yes.
he walks off just to have a scene... Where, like, I guess for the dead guy to kill the other two students. And he walks off for no reason. I think for a phone call.
Yeah, or get a
in
drink.
The 1800s.
He's getting a drink.
And he goes off. And then when they go back to Chaney, he's, like, there supposedly just making looks like he's excited about his discovery.
Yeah, his and theory. Standing- my theory. His theory. You never hear what his theory. It's always my theory. I have a theory.
They wouldn't even bother to come up with how they brought a dead guy. Oh, my theory will bring dead people to life.
That's right. I think one dead guy does pop up off the table.
Yes,
he's
and
a bald
he kills.
Guy, and he looks like confused. Like he looks like
what
like,
am I doing?
Like
in this
Doodles Weaver, I think he looks like. Yeah, what am I doing? And then he strangles Lon Chaney, and that's the end.
Doodles Weaver, who killed himself.
Well, that's right. Very sad.
Indeed he did.
Which it's very sad.
But then if you Doodles Weaver, you'd have to kill yourself. There's well, no other.
Sigourney's Uncle Doodles.
Yes.
That's right. Pat Weaver's brother.
That's right. Pat Weaver's brother. Is that why he killed him? My brother's a CBS, the president of CBS, NBC, and I'm a comedian.
Yes.
But I'll take Doodles Weaver any day.
Tell us about meeting Groucho when you were a kid.
My dad actually knew Erin Fleming, who was Groucho's girlfriend in the 60s. Sorry. And, you know, they knew each other. So we were out in Los Angeles in 1974 vacationing, my dad and my brothers. So she called my dad and said, Groucho loves kids. Could you come visit? And, you know, so he mentioned that. Sure, we'd love that. So we went to his house. Groucho answered the door. He came up to us. And first thing he said was, It's a pleasure to meet you and your three lovely daughters. Our hair was a little long. And, you know, so it was an amazing afternoon with Groucho. He sang his songs with Erin Fleming. At one point, my brother Josh asked, Groucho, we used to live in Great Neck, Long Island. There was a theater there called The Playhouse. In the back, they had an old organ. It used to be a vaudeville theater. Do you remember it? And Groucho said, I got an old organ myself. So everything was a straight line and everything. Was like, you know, he couldn't actually have a conversation with the man. Dennis Wilson of the Beach Boys walked in. Groucho he didn't know who he was. He goes to Groucho. He says, Mr. Marx, it's an honor to meet you. And Groucho looks up at him. He goes, it ought to be. And it went on and on like that. But that was like, you know, I was 15 at the time, so that was pretty amazing. We didn't take any photographs, which I don't know why. But there we are.
And I heard that then you got an invitation to come back.
Yes. My dad, after the next day, Erin Fleming again, the notorious Erin Fleming. But, you know, this was before we knew about her. She was beating him up and slapping him around.
Oh, yeah.
She called back my dad. calls back my dad and says, like, Groucho had such a great time, he'd like to invite you back next week, and our special guest in the house is going to be Mae West. They haven't seen each other in 35 years since they were at Paramount together. So my dad says to my brothers and I, Groucho's invited us back. Mae West is going to be his guest. And we say, we kind of look at each other and goes, we had enough Groucho. So to this day, I regret that.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Or tell the audience who you're our listener, who your dad was.
Well, my dad's a writer named Bruce J. Friedman.
Still is, I mean.
Yeah, he still is. He's a writer. He's written
Well, you could kill him now, and then he would have been.
Well, he would have.
Bruce J. Friedman.
He still is, and he's still active. But he's written a lot of movies. He's written some movies like Splash and Stir Crazy and plays like Steam Bath. And he wrote Heartbreak Kid, the movie Heartbreak Kid. It became the Neil Simon film.
Steam Bath, where Valerie Perrine is
naked. I know that. That's all you remember.
Yes. Right past Bill Bixby.
Right past the actual plot.
And Bill Bixby was in it.
Right. Well, that was the TV version a little later.
Yeah.
Art Matrano was in there. And he had a small part. And Herb Edelman, quite a cast.
Oh, yes.
And Kenneth Mars. And so, that was on TV with Bill Bixby. And I chose Bill Bixby for the part because the public TV, WNET, they proposed three actors to my dad.
Yeah.
Dennis Weaver, James Franciscus, or Bill Bixby. This was like 1972. Yeah. So my dad didn't know who any of them were. He didn't really watch TV. So he came to me. He said, Drew, who should I pick? I said, Bixby's your man. And I based that on Bixby's performance in Courtship of Eddie's Father.
Yes.
Where he was very good in that with Brandon DeWile.
And he was really good in Steam Bath.
He was. He was good. You know, it was a good production. And Bill Bixby, you know.
And you could see Valerie Perrine naked.
That's right. That's what everybody seems to remember.
Yes.
But there was more to it than that.
I'm going to correct you because I got Playboy magazine wrong. Brandon Cruz instead of Brandon DeWile.
You are right.
Have I redeemed myself?
Who's Brandon DeWile? I'm thinking of. Okay.
No.
From Shame.
You keep bringing up Playboy. And it's your biggest disaster.
I'm going to get him working Playboy yet.
Brandon Cruz, who was like, I think dated Jodie Foster, didn't they? They were together in Courtship of Eddie's Father. And then he became a punk singer, didn't he?
I believe Brandon. So.
You should get him for the show. He's got all those Mrs. Livingston stories.
Didn't he become an animator who worked on South Park?
Quite possible, yeah.
I believe so.
But, you know, he was good on that show, too.
Oh, here, speaking of Groucho, do you remember, you definitely remember this, the story of Mankind.
Of course.
Yeah.
That was Irwin
Allen production. And he got Harpo and Chico.
And
but
Harpo,
not together,
Chico
not together.
Chico and Groucho all separately.
Yeah, not all separate.
Yeah.
You get the Marx Brothers.
It's the Marx Brothers, but let's have them all work separately. Because that's where their strength is.
Well, they pretty much work separately in Love Happy, too.
Basically. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Well, Groucho was busy with Marilyn Monroe in that one, at least.
Right.
But I think Groucho, he's the guy who discovers Manhattan Island in that one.
Oh, yes.
And
One of his ex-wives is
Eden, yeah. She doesn't wear pants.
She's.
And Harpo, she has a little skirt on, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's why he took the part.
Oh, yeah.
Because his wife could get work. But I think Harpo plays Isaac Newton.
Oh, yes.
And an apple falls on his head. He doesn't speak.
And Chico is like, was there because, as always, he was broke.
He needed the money.
He was a gambler.
That's right. Chico needed the money.
Yeah.
That was always his excuse. Everything Groucho did after 1940. Well, yeah. Chico needed the money.
And then they asked me to do it because Chico was in it.
Like, Chico needed the money. This is an excuse. Why did you appear in this piece of shit, Groucho? Oh, Chico needed the money. All right, well, we'll give you a free ride then.
Let's go to
why did you kill that woman and her child?
Chico needed the money.
Yes, Chico was a gambler, and he lost money on a horse. So I killed
Why did you kill Sharon Tate? Well, Chico needed the money.
Let's talk about something really unusual.
Why did you start? Why did you perpetuate the Holocaust?
You won't stop him.
Well, Chico needed the money.
Why did you kill JFK, Groucho? Chico needed the money.
You killed Martin Luther King. Well, Chico needed the money.
Here, Drew, you want to read the questions?
What's the question?
Let's go on.
Groucho, why did you bomb the World Trade Center?
Chico needed the money.
Why did you supply Philip Seymour Hoffman with heroin?
Well, Chico needed the money.
You're off the hook.
Wow. Let me go completely off the reservation here and ask
ask
her about your artwork.
Oh, okay.
Draw?
He does.
Well, look around us. We're here at the Society of Illustrators. We're celebrating old Jewish comedians right here.
And why are you doing
this? Because Chico needs the money.
When did you know? Your dad was obviously a comedy writer, and you grew up in a funny house. When did you know that you were going to draw as opposed to write?
I'll veer off for a second. It was like I was a weird little kid.
Yeah, because it was really going on a straight line.
Exactly.
Up until now.
I'll veer off of Chico.
Okay, I'll see if we can get back.
But I was like I was a strange little kid. You know, maybe not to you guys, because we share similar. But, when I was a little kid, I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to go to camp. I didn't want to go out and play. I just wanted to sit in my room with my guinea pig and read Mad Magazine and comic books and Famous Monsters.
Me, exactly.
And watch Soupy Sales.
Yes.
Still that way.
Watch Soupy Sales and watch
the
Three Stooges. Yeah, and the Bowery Boys and Adventures of Superman. That's all I wanted. I had to go to school. I had to go to school.
Oh, yes. Forced,
but I'm still angry about that. But I was just obsessed with Mad Magazine, mainly Mad. I got my education from Dave Berg, basically. He taught me everything I needed to know about life from the lighter side. But anyway, like you guys, I was like, just obsessed with comic books and Mad, and that was like, I didn't want to leave my room. And it's like still hard to get me out of my room, my office. So I was drawing at an early age, and I guess I showed some kind of weird talent for it, and I stuck with it. And here we are today,
I remember when I was a kid that in elementary school, the teacher was playing a game like, I'm going to say two initials, and you have to guess a famous person with that name. And, so they go A-L. So, Abraham Lincoln and stuff like that. And then she goes O-S. And I, very excitedly, I was like 4 at the time, I jump up and go, Onslow Stevens.
That would have been my natural reaction.
Yes.
And G-S, Glenn Strange.
Onslow Stevens, like descendants, wouldn't know that name.
You remember him, Frank.
You even lost me on that.
He was the mad doctor in House of Dracula.
That's right.
Oh, I know who he is.
Who was going to cure the monsters of their ailments.
They couldn't get Boris Koller for that one.
Did he have a monocle?
Well, he was under the quicksand from the first one.
They couldn't get Bela Lugosi, so they got John Carradine to play Dracula in that one. But he was actually good. He was good.
I love Carradine.
He gave him a little mustache.
Yes. And a top hat.
That's right.
And he was
a dashing Dracula.
He was good, and I always loved Carradine, but you had to have Lugosi as Dracula.
You would think. Abbott and Costello figured that out.
Yes.
Finally. After 20 years, we should get him back as Dracula. He was pretty good in that.
Yeah.
Back in 1930. Let's get him.
That That's what started the entire horror craze is Lugosi as Dracula. Yeah. Well, maybe he was good.
Let's not use him again as Dracula. let's wait 20 years before we use him again.
And in Dracula's Daughter, they had a paper mache Bela Lugosi lying in a coffin.
Right.
It was no so, what an insult.
And then MGM brought him over for Mark of the Vampire, but he wasn't Dracula. He was like, was that Alucard?
No. Alucard.
Wasn't that the son of Dracula?
Yes, that's son right. of, you with Lon Chaney Jr.
An overweight, the son of Dracula.
Yes, very, well, blood has a lot of calories.
That's right. He was an overweight. He had a big paunch when he was the mummy, and he was at a paunch when he played Dragon. He was like the fattest mummy.
Even with all the bandages on, you could see a pot belly.
He was a well-fed mummy. You know, Boris Karloff at least was emaciated. But, you know. Tom Tyler was kind of thin.
Oh,
too,
yes.
But Chaney was a fat mummy. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And what does Universal do? They use him 5 times in mummy films.
Yeah.
Even though he had a big belly.
And a fat Dracula.
Right.
They also gave him a mustache.
That's right. Is the mummy. That's right.
And he still had that Oklahoma accent.
That's right. He couldn't lose it.
Yeah.
Said, to me, he sounds like Penn Jillette. If you listen to both of them, it's very similar. Which is, you know, I love Penn, but you know, I when I hear Penn talk, I hear Lon Chaney Jr.
Yeah, I come from the hills of Transylvania. Okay,
that's right.
There he was, Alucard.
That's right.
In Return of the Vampire, it was always a name like Orkoff or something like that.
Only the fun. We love Lon Chaney Jr., but, you know, even in The Wolfman, he's Claude Rains' son. That just doesn't work.
Oh, yes.
Well, this distinguished British actor who's a foot shorter than Lon Chaney. You know, Gilbert and I, we analyze these things.
Yeah.
You know,
I see that.
Still
yeah,
love it.
Yeah.
It just wasn't working.
Claude Rains comes up to his knees.
Father, I have something to admit. I have a theory.
But my favorite Claude Rains line is in, because Chaney is talking about, does he believe in lycanthropy? And he goes, well, yes, certain forms of schizophrenia. But a man actually taking the shape of a wolf, I know, it's fantastic.
That's right. Thank you, Father.
And Bela Lugosi as Bela.
Yeah, and Maria Ospenskaya,
oh,
of course,
Maria
who we all love.
And
right.
You know, Maria Ospenskaya is one of like the she's known as like one of the most famous acting teachers. Way before Lee Strasberg.
She invented the whole
was
acting.
Was it Stanislavski?
Yeah, she practically invented it. And then she's appearing in Universal Horror.
Right.
And she must have felt like she was doing porn to be doing.
It was a come down, I think. You know, didn't quite work. Her Hollywood career didn't quite work. But she's well remembered, you know. I think she's mentioned on Dick Van Dyke Show. They bring up her name, don't they? One time.
Maria Ospenskaya.
Yeah, they do bring it up. She's
mentioned in an Odd Couple episode by Jack Carter.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
which is pretty obscure.
I heard that, Chico Marx's daughter, Maxine, wanted to be an actress at one point, and she took lessons from Maria Ospenskaya.
Ah, that's right.
And one time, and I wish there had been at least a snapshot of this, Chico invited her out to dinner. And it was Chico Marx and Maria Ospenskaya.
Well, he would fuck anything. You know that. You know. It's like even, you know, Sophie
Chico.
Tucker. That's right. That's something I could draw, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Them and Beth together. But
hey, Maria. Oh, boy, that's a hot.
If Chico's daughter started doing the Italian accent, her career might have taken off a little, you know?
She looked like Chico.
Yeah,
that
she
was
did.
If
she used to, hey, boss. What's the matter? If she had adapted her father's mannerism, she might have gone far, but she resisted that. I don't know why.
I'm going to attempt a segue here. Speaking of Jack Carter.
You were in Playboy, weren't you?
Yes, he was. I was in a centerfold, yes.
Little Annie Fanny.
1963.
I was in Playboy in this last month's issue.
You're right.
January, February.
Maybe that's
issue.
What I was thinking.
That was a beautiful, great illustration by my friend Philip Burke. He drew you.
Hey,
and you had a beautiful comment about Shemp, which I shared on Facebook. The women screaming Shemp when they're reaching orgasm.
Yes,
basically.
Yes.
It was beautiful. I loved it.
Yeah, it was in the one with Kate Moss on the cover. January, February issue. Oh, I'm sorry.
My subscription ran out.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know.
Why would you let your subscription run out when you used to draw so much for Playboy,
right,
as only Frank remembers?
Frank, Jack Carter.
Well, I was headed somewhere, but I don't remember.
Jack Carter.
Jack Carter. Well, I was going
to
ask
to
you.
To oblivion, if I have anything to say about it.
I was going to ask you about some of the people you've drawn who haven't exactly appreciated.
Well, I'll talk about one guy who I wasn't sure about at first. When I did the first book, Old Jewish Comedians, the publisher sent them out to some of the still-living comedians. You know?
And plus, it would be a waste of postage.
No, I was all for sending them out to the dead ones, like drop them off at their grave sites. So they sent them to, you know, so we sent it to Mickey Freeman and Freddie Roman. And they called me, actually, left messages on the phone. They loved it. They loved the book. So we sent one to Jerry Lewis, too, in Las Vegas. So Jerry calls, leaves a message. Hello, Drew Friedman. This is Jerry Lewis. Please call me back. And he leaves his phone number twice. I say, oh, shit. Jerry doesn't sound happy.
Yeah.
What did I do? Is it because I didn't put him on the cover? I put Milton Berle on
it?
Because I gave him that stupid expression?
Yeah.
So I got up my nerve. I say to Kathy, I say, all right, I'm going to call him back. And I call him back. I say, hi, Jerry. So you got the book? And he goes, yes, Drew, I got the book. I said, well, what'd you think? Jesus Christ, I loved it. Holy moly, what a book. So I was safe. But Jack Carter was not happy.
Notice I went negative first before the Jerry Lewis.
A reporter from the LA Times called me and said, what do you think about being a book called Old Jewish Comedians? He goes, he hadn't seen it. He goes, old? He was like, 90, I think at the time he was 97. He was 97. And Jewish? I don't work Jewish. I was like, yeah, well, you happen to be Jewish. You don't work Jewish. I don't work Jewish.
Yeah, because you never would have known
Jack
Carter was Jewish.
How about comedian? You okay with the word comedian? And he goes, and then he finally saw the drawing, and it got worse. He goes, he drew me with those stupid liver spots. And he gave me, combed my hair over like I'm going bald. He said, I want him to draw me again. I didn't talk to him, but I said, no, tell him, like, one drawing per Jew, one drawing per customer. That was it. He wasn't happy. Sid Caesar, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
He wasn't happy either.
Oh,
because
wow.
I outed his real name. Kathy and I did research back in the, you know, when the interwebs were still early.
Kathy, your lovely wife.
That's right. And so his name, in all the websites said Isaac Sidney Caesar. So that's what we used in the book, because the only text in the books are their real Jewish names, because every one of them changed their names, except for one or two. Karl Reiner is really Karl Reiner. Menasheh Skolnick is really Menasheh Skolnick.
Yeah, you wouldn't change
it. Myron Cohen.
And Myron Cohen is right. Myron Cohen. But all the others one changed because they couldn't get work because they were Jews, and, you know, so like you know the story. So we kind of outed Sid Caesar. I outed Don Knotts, too. His real name is Archibald, or so all the sites said at the time. And he was offended, so his agent called and said, oh, yeah, Don is not happy about this. Called from Las Vegas. I said, shit, you know, so I'm sorry. I love Don Rickles. The last thing I wanted to do was offend him. I said, so we'll make a correction in the second book. So the correction is basically Don Rickles says his name was not Archibald. Sid Caesar claims his name was not, because we're not so sure. You know, it's like it's possible they just don't want, they want their legacy to say Sid Caesar, Don Rickles like that. So, you know, some of them were pissed off. But most of them love the books. And some of them will be here when we have the opening reception for this in 2 nights. You know, some
and
of the.
You accidentally mentioned Don Knotts, whose real name was Jesse.
That's right.
And when he was dying, Andy Griffith visited his hospital bed and said, speak to me, Jesse. Speak to me, because he thought by calling him Jesse would annoy him enough. He didn't want to be called Jesse. And he kept saying, come on, speak, Jesse.
Did that work?
No.
That killed him.
Yeah, that finished.
They should have brought Jim Nabors and Rock Hudson. That would have gotten a jolt out of him. Surprise.
I heard that.
What have you heard?
Yeah.
Because I was just about to bring up Milton Berle's cock. So let's segue into that.
You could.
We're saving that.
You don't
we're
have the strength.
We're saving that one. And then we'll get to Danny Thomas.
When they were doing Gomer Pyles in the Marines.
That's right.
What was that? Gomer Pyles?
He was in Vietnam, I think.
Yes, and, you know. Yes. But that was the show that was a spinoff.
That's right.
And he was a Marine. And I heard they had an actual Marine who was like a technical advisor, mm-hmm. and a real tough as nails guy. And he would get really uncomfortable because Rock Hudson would visit Jim Nabors on the set. And they both would drink a little and get a little frisky. Tired. Yeah. They'd be prancing around and giggling and hugging each other.
Did you attend the wedding? I've never met anybody.
He was there.
Were you at the wedding? Because I wasn't invited.
I wish to God.
I wasn't invited. But Wally Cox was the best man. I know that.
And the joke around that time was, after Rock Hudson died, was Rock Hudson had no friends, but he had neighbors up the ass.
That's a beauty.
I think Mark Twain.
Yes. I believe it was.
I think it was Robert Frost. Soroyan. It was Robert Frost. It was one of his final poems.
Correct.
Beautiful. That still brings a tear to my eye. Do you want to segue into Milton Berle?
No.
We have him right here on the cover of your book.
That's so right. I wanted to capture that angry Milton Berle. Remember he used to go on Joe Franklin's show? Shut up, Joe. I'm talking.
Oh,
pointing
yes.
At him,
yes.
And his cigar smoke was dribbling down his chin. And he would shut, and Joe would like, I'm sorry, Milton. he just let him go, and he was never funny. But I love Milton because, when he used to go on Howard Stern's show, Howard would only want to talk about his cock. That's it, nothing else. And Milton, what's the matter with you, Howard? What would your mother say? Well, there are other things we should talk about. So maybe then occasionally Howard would bring us something up, the old days. And Milton said, he would get the conversation back to his cock instantly. that's all he was,
Because I heard that Milton Berle once in Vegas had a competition with Tom Jones over who had the biggest cock.
After the Forrest Tucker competition.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
Forrest Tucker. He only took out enough to win.
Yes. And I heard Milton Berle opened up his pants a little bit.
Yeah.
And Tom Jones just went, okay.
It's over.
Yeah.
That's right. I've met a few people who've seen it. And they said we know, Kathy and I, a young lady. A young lady who actually directed Milton Berle's last film and Adam Sandler's first film.
Oh, my God.
Going Overboard. You remember that one?
Oh,
jeez.
Wow.
It's it's an interesting film, but Milton was in there.
I think this stands out as being a bad Adam Sandler movie.
It's the first in a series of bad Adam, right from the get-go. But she said, let me see it.
Yes.
She was direct. She said, all right, let me see it. He obliged her instantly.
Oh, yes.
Set up a table.
Set up a table.
He said it was a process of getting it out. She said it was multicolored. It was you see a big piece of tongue in the delicatessen. It hasn't been sliced up yet. He plopped it down on the table with a big thud. And there it is. She said it was the most disturbed. She still has nightmares about it.
And didn't he also walk around parties?
Yeah, naked.
Yeah, and he'd put his dick on a serving platter and walk around.
Who has it right? Of course. Well, you expect it. When he threw a party, you expect it. But he would walk around his dressing room naked in front of his writers. This guy's trying to come up with material, and there he was. Irving Brecker talked about that in the early 30s. Milton would open the door the first time he met him, and there he was naked, with the gigantic schlong. And he said, yes, it's completely true. Everything you've ever heard, all true. All true. Not made up.
Oh, we should get back to Erin Fleming.
Oh, okay.
Now, that was Groucho's girlfriend.
It was his concubine.
Yeah.
His caretaker.
And then news started coming out about her.
Little by little, she maybe was a little rough on him, slap him around, throw him down the stairs, beat him over the head with baseball bats,
threatened to kill other members of his relatives.
Yeah, she got out of control. She wound up homeless, actually.
Yeah, homeless in Santa Monica. She shot herself.
I guess so.
Yeah. She was homeless, and then she blew her brains out.
She lost it. Yeah. She lost it. You could see it happening. She was Flemmo, of course, as Michael O'Donoghue wrote about her. I think they did a report. And Flemmo, she was the sixth Marx Brothers. Yeah. She was kind of a sad figure. We knew her when she was still, at her height. She was inviting Elliot Gould over to the house all the time.
Oh, and Bill Cosby.
And Sally Kellerman was always there. And she'd fill his house with young, hip celebrities. Yeah. And so that's when we were invited. We didn't say anything weird or askew about her.
you know. But little by little, you know, it started. And it's gonna someday. There's gonna be a TV movie.
Oh,
who's gonna play old Groucho? you would be perfect, I think.
Because Groucho, why did your girlfriend Erin Fleming kill herself?
Well, Chico needed the money.
Groucho, why did Erin throw you down the stairs?
Because Chico needed the money.
Someday, I predict there'll be it'll probably be a shitty film, but I'm predicting ahead of time. It'll be a TV movie of the week.
Another one of our favorites is...
Kevin Spacey could play old Groucho.
Oh, yes. Bud and Lou.
Well, of course.
With Buddy Hackett and Harvey Korman.
Yeah.
You listen to them do their bits.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's slowed down when Buddy Hackett does Lou. Okay, I bet. He's like, you know, he's like slows down the entire routines and all the timing is gone.
Yeah, because it's like in Who's on First, he would go, what's the guy's name on first base? And there he's going, Buddy Hackett's going, what is the guy's name on first base?
It's like they've never seen the routine.
Yes.
Harvey Korman looked nothing like Bud Abbott.
No, he sounded nothing.
He was like, he tried to do a gravel voice at least, because, you know, he won an Emmy maybe. He was like,
or a Peabody.
I remember Shecky Green like going, like, wasn't Buddy Hackett great as Lou Costello? I remember on Tonight Show specifically saying, wasn't he great on it? Shouldn't he get an Emmy for that performance? Johnny Carson looking at him like,
No, he sucked. No, actually, was.
And my
fascinating.
My old-time favorite death scene is Buddy Hackett lying in a hospital bed, and Artie Johnson, very interesting, from Laughing.
Oh, playing Eddie Sherman.
Yes,
he shows
up.
He's good in it.
And he brings him under his coat, a strawberry malted, and he goes, you know, he takes a sip, and he goes, you know, I had a lot of strawberry malted in my day, but this one's the best. And he falls down
dead.
That's
right.
It was great.
When they tell him his son died, like, I'm sorry, Lou. Lou Jr. just died. He goes,
my son Lou Jr. just died.
He's like, you know, like, get on with it. Yeah, he just died. He's dead. He drowned.
My son Lou Jr. He's like, yeah, it takes like a half an hour, though. I have to set up a foundation for Lou Jr. Louis Jr.
We got duplicate tickets here.
He died. I'm a bad boy.
Groucho, why did Lou Costello Jr. have to die?
Because Chico needed the money.
You mentioned Howard Stern a minute ago. Tell us how Howard Stern became one of your biggest fans.
Well, actually, Billy West, who was one of your recent guests, actually brought Howard one of our books, Warts and All. And then the next day, this is around 20 years ago or so, Howard was talking about it on the air, actually reading some of the dialogue from. And since then, we kind of had we kind of hit it off. I illustrated both of Howard's books, Miss America and Private Parts. And, you know, so he's been very supportive of me over the years and, you know, He's mentioned that I'm his favorite artist. I don't agree, but that's what he claims. I mean, I don't agree that I'm my favorite artist. But anyway, so we go way back. He's been very supportive, terrific guy, and I like Jerry Lewis too. You know, I have nothing bad to say about him.
See, Jerry Lewis is one of those people infamous. I've just met him a handful of times, and he was always nice to me. Mm-hmm. And that's the classic line. When you talk to, he was, I met Kathleen Freeman, and I said, so what was Jerry Lewis like to work with? Because she worked with him in a lot of movies. And she said, well, he was always nice to me.
He's always nice to me. I remember Gilbert doing the Aristocrats joke in front of Jerry. I think that's what gave him the heart attack. He had a heart attack that afternoon at the Hilton Hotel.
And when he grabbed his chest and went, hi!
It was a beautiful moment.
How did the old Jewish comedians book come about, the first one?
Well,
and the book series.
Briefly, the editor of the books, Monty Beauchamp, my friend, was doing these series of books and said, Drew, do you want to do one? These square hardcovers. You can do anything you want. And I said, well, the money isn't great, but what do I like drawing the most? I like drawing old Jews, and I like drawing comedians. So I combined that, old Jewish comedians. So that's what I came up with. So we've done three books now, and now we're here at the Society of Illustrators, where they're having the Old Jewish Comedian Show with all the artwork is hanging. And the show's going to be on for 2 months through May. So hopefully everybody can come visit.
Hopefully we'll have the podcast up soon enough for
That'd
people
be terrific,
to hear this.
Right?
Hopefully we'll visit. Have a podcast.
Fun show. Even if you hate Jews.
Don't assume anything.
Yeah. Even if you hate Jews, you're going to love this show. Even if you're Mel Gibson, you're going to love this show. I guarantee it. And, you know, it's like everybody, not everybody loves the Jews, but everybody loves old Jewish comedians.
Let's talk about
Danny Thomas.
Okay.
You know what, when they finally write the glass coffee table book about Danny Thomas, you know the title.
Make Room for Duty?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Should that end it?
Don't encourage him.
Now, we both knew Sid Melton.
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You mean personally? Or?
No, I met him personally about three times.
Ah.
Yeah, that's
it. He lived
it.
In Van Nuys.
Yes.
Yeah.
In a pathetic apartment.
Near where Joey Ross died.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Joey Ross died in Van Nuys.
And I heard Joey Ross, before he died, grabbed his chest and went, ooh.
That's likely.
That's right. Joey Ross used to, you know, he married hookers.
Yes.
And then he would get offended that all his friends were fucking them. I can't believe this. So he'd keep divorcing and marry another one.
And I heard that Nat Hyken hated Joey.
Well, Joey smelled. That was like, to begin with.
Like Rosie Grier?
Yeah. And Imogene Coco, who was a distinguished actress, you know, from your show. And she had to work with him, and he was wearing a loincloth at that point. And it's about time. She couldn't stand him. Nobody liked him.
And I heard
Fred Gwynne put up with him. He liked him.
I heard he thought he was like he immediately thought he was a big Shakespearean actor and a major star. And I heard one time they had some people who were invited to the set, some women who were from some whatever religious group, and they passed by Joey Ross's dressing room. The door was open and he was there jerking off.
What else would you expect?
I don't know if he wore his hat.
Something else only I could draw. I'm going to get right to work on that one. What was he jerking off to? I have to. What in particular?
The thing with two heads.
He was jerking off to pictures of Al Lewis.
Mario
Schnauzer. Schnauzer. I never heard that one, but that's a nice memory.
I met Joey Ross.
Wow.
At Cantor's, when it used to be a hangout.
Yeah.
And
when it was good.
Oh, yes.
Before
yes,
it was lousy. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And I remember I had just done a pilot, and I was there with the other guy who worked on the pilot, and we met Joey Ross, and we told him, and Joey Ross said, "Well, I just hope you guys have the luck that I did. I did three pilots, and they all became series."
That's great.
That was great.
He was amazing.
Yeah.
I think they want to close.
The Society?
Yeah.
No, they put a for sale sign.
I think it's closing. Everybody's hungry.
They left.
It's only midnight. What have we left out?
They're showing new tenants the building.
What have we left
Before
out?
Before we run.
One
can,
more.
Can I ask you, you were kind enough to give me a copy of Skidoo for my birthday.
Oh, my God.
Could you briefly share your passion for the movie Skidoo?
Well, you know, it's like Skidoo is one of those films where they give it to a guy who's never made a comedy in his life, with no sense of humor, Otto Preminger, who also shared Danny Thomas's passion for glass coffee tables, by the way.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that over dinner.
All right.
But what does Hollywood do in 1960? They give him a movie to do, a comedy movie, all-star comedy movie too. It's possibly the worst film, worst comedy ever made, possibly the worst film ever made, with the greatest cast. Jackie Gleason, Carol Channing, who does the striptease in it.
Oh.
It's disturbing. It's hard to watch. Right. Frankie Avalon.
And Groucho.
Yes. Groucho Marx is like, you know, why did you appear in that film, Groucho? He plays God.
Chico needed the money. Even though Chico had been dead for 10 years, he still needed the money for his maintenance of his gravesite.
But it's fascinating to watch as Jackie Gleason is angry throughout the whole film. Like,
How did I get in this?
Doesn't he drop acid in the picture?
He dropped with Austin Pendleton.
Groucho's name is LSD.
He's God in that one.
Oh, he's God. Okay.
Right. Dick Shawn is LSD in the
picture. Oh, okay. Okay.
He's God in that.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Not a laugh to be had, but it's fascinating just the same.
And it's Hollywood showing they didn't understand the whole hippie youth movement.
Right. Like
proving
it.
Yeah.
We got to be part of this. But it's like giving Stanley Kramer, another guy who never made a comedy, who actually made a funny one. So that was the thinking. Like anybody can direct a comedy. So they gave it one to Otto Preminger. You know, it was like, hardly ever made a good movie, let alone a comedy movie. Yeah, Laura was his one, classic.
Well, then Anatomy of a Murder.
Yeah, but he was all of a sudden the comedy director. It's fascinating to watch. It's
now,
good to do.
I heard that John Philip Law.
He's a hippie.
He was offered the part of Joe Buck in Midnight Cowboy.
I heard that too. That's right.
And he turned it down because he figured, hey, what? I'm going to play a homosexual hustler out in the street when I could be doing a classic comedy with Groucho Marx and Jackie Gleason.
I think you know why he didn't take that film? Because he didn't want to get a blowjob from Bob Balaban. When he read that, when his agent said, well, look, we got Bob Balaban, on 42nd Street, he's going to get, going to blow you. He said, hey, but do I need this?
But then they asked John Philip Law, why'd you take Skidoo? He said, because Chico.
Thank you, Drew.
My pleasure.
Okay.
My pleasure.
Right.
Is this
going to...
Is the show going to be canceled?
Yes.
Thank you.
It's never happened.
It's a pleasure.
It won't be a shock when it's canceled.
Next time we'll go further.
We're here at the Society of Illustrators on 63rd between Park and Lex. Here with famous illustrator and cartoonist Drew Friedman. I'm Gilbert Gottfried, here with my co-host, Frank Santropadre, and this has been the Amazing Colossal Podcast.